Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Former Missouri Congressman Bill Clay received an outpouring of praise after he died last week. And who could blame anyone? Clay left an absolutely titanic legacy during his 94 years on Earth. He actively sought to dismantle racial discrimination as both an activist and a member of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. He became the first Black person to ever represent Missouri in Congress, and he helped pass landmark labor legislation, most notably the federal family leave law in the early 1990s. What's remarkable here is that Clay managed to accomplish all of those things while facing withering criticism during his time in office. His adversaries commonly derided him as a radical and divisive figure. But Clay didn't see those slings and arrows as particularly unusual. During a 1992 speech in Washington, D.C., promoting his book, Just Permanent Interests, Clay noted how movies and racist politicians often caricatured post-Civil War African-American elected officials as lazy, stupid, corrupt, and alien to the people they represented.
And contrary to the omissions and the distortions about them, these were some fabulous and fascinating people. The birth of a nation was a shame to this nation when they depicted the Black elected officials as being uneducated, as being uncouth, as sitting in legislative chambers and eating chicken and throwing the bones on the floor. These were downright damn lies. The 22 members who served in the Congress during the Reconstruction era were not buffoons. They were honorable. They were the most educated, the most politically experienced, probably of any group of people who served in that Congress.
Perhaps one of Clay's lesser talked about accomplishments was how he created an environment that allowed other Black officials to obtain real, tangible power in St. Louis. He parlayed that into the national arena when he helped create the Congressional Black Caucus, a group, as he explained in the 1992 speech, played a critical role in preserving some of President Lyndon Johnson's policy agenda.
You see, if it not had not been for the leadership of the Congressional Black Caucus in coalition with some other liberal elements in the Congress, the Great Society programs would have been destroyed in the Nixon administration. Nixon rode into town thinking he had a mandate. He only got elected by less than 1% of the vote. But he thought he had a mandate to destroy the Great Society programs. And he advocated it. But we beat him at every turn.
Clay was masterful at banding together unusual coalitions. In his early years, he developed a bond with organized labor, particularly the Pipefitters Union. And he strongly defended the redistricting alliances between Republicans and Black Democrats, who both wanted to keep the first congressional district majority African American. But in Just Permanent Interests, Clay noted that he was able to succeed because he didn't grasp on to elaborate fantasies about what politics could be. Instead, he wrote that politics was a deadly serious enterprise with rules structured to ensure that only the strongest survive. He added that neophytes, weaklings, and the unprepared entering this domain are quickly entangled in a maze of confusion, baffled by contradictions, and bewildered by numerous confirmations. Black politicians who obtained power after Clay, such as former St. Louis Alderman Mike Jones, also developed a clear-eyed view of politics.
Fundamentally, politics is a real simple business. You can have what you can take. You can keep what you can hold. Okay? That it's yours for as long as you can keep it. because you want it don't mean you own it, okay? And just like you came for somebody, somebody will always be coming for you.
Clay often needed to stay on guard, not just against white political adversaries or the media, but also other black political officials. One of the consequences of developing a vibrant political environment for African Americans is that Clay sometimes faced challenges from within. And those were not friendly sparring matches. One opponent erroneously accused Clay of hiring a hitman to kill his political rivals. And his son, former Congressman Lacey Clay, pointed out that in 1982, his opponent accused him of being out of touch.
His opponent put out a commercial that was kind of effective and said that Bill Clay travels between Washington and St. Louis on first class. TWA was the airline St. Louis was the hub for Transworld Airline. And my dad held a press conference when he got off the plane 1 week at Lambert and said, yes, the voters in my district would expect nothing less than a first-class congressman. And that was his response, and that issue went away. So he was witty, he was funny at times, but he could be very serious and focused, too.
It's worth noting that Bill Clay didn't magically remove all the obstacles that trip up St. Louis's African-American officials. For the most part, black politicians often have had a lot of trouble raising money, putting them at a distinct disadvantage when they contemplate running for some post in St. Louis or St. Louis County. And earlier this year, St. Louis Alderwoman Alicia Saunier explained in painstaking detail a familiar type of criticism she regularly faced since she became an elected official.
We do not get the grace periods that other leaders get. And especially there's high criticism levels. I've gotten emails from people saying, you speak in Ebonics and this is not the ghetto. I've had comments from people on my hair. It's too long. Why is it that color? People comment on my nails and how long my skirt is. Someone who is a counterpart that might be a white male could come in a Hawaiian shirt and flip-flops and nobody's going to really comment or say anything. And so I definitely think that those standards are there. And while I hold that those standards are there, I think that racism and sexism, those things existed before I was here. They're going to exist while I'm here. And I'm not going to let those be the reasons that I'm not successful. And I'm also not going to let that be the thing that other black leaders have in their head and they don't try to go and lead their communities. And that persuades them from thinking that they have an opportunity to lead and to be supported.
I would hesitate to extrapolate too much from Clay's experience to all of modern day politics, especially since much of his focus was on the betterment of black people as opposed to the betterment of the Democratic Party. But Clay's ability to plainly speak out against obvious injustices, even if it made him enemies, did seem to be a winning electoral strategy. He never lost an election when he was running for Congress or the Board of Aldermen. And perhaps keeping firm to guiding principles, like he mentioned during his 1992 speech in Washington, D.C., could provide more credibility to potential voters.
That we should never lose our basic interests. Because one of our problems is that we get more concerned about other people's interests than we lose sight of our own. Now, we can have a coalition with environmentalists, with consumers, and with organized labor. But running through all of that is a strand that says we're black and that's our primary interest. And until we live in a society that's colorblind, it will remain our primary interest. So the title of this book comes from the motto of the Congressional Black Caucus, which says that black people have no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests.
There may never be another Missouri politician like Bill Clay ever again, but that doesn't mean the people who walked on the trail he blazed can't make a mark of their own to reach the elusive goal of liberty for all of St. Louis and all of America.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.